Hi, I'm Libby Fulton.
And I'm Greg Greenfell.
And we like to garden.
We like to garden. We like to garden. We like to garden. We like to garden.
Nailed it, Greg.
Thanks. Welcome to our hotly anticipated number two.
Cliffhanger.
That we tempted you with last week. I think it's been touted in newspapers around the country as the most anticipated podcast series.
Definitely.
In 2022.
Yeah. I thought you were just going to say in gardening circles, and I was like, ooh, yeah.
Oh, no, around the country. Wind and drought. I mean, it's a double whammy.
Before we get into it, leave us a review on Apple. We love to see it, and it helps the show. And join us on Facebook and Instagram at We Like to Garden. And let's get into drought, because it's something that Libby is having personal experience with at the minute. Not necessarily the weather, but like your conditions of your soil are very like drought-like, because it's so free draining.
Although not at the moment, not currently, but I guess current as in I'm thinking about it for planning for the garden for this coming ahead summer season. So,
yeah. And it's super relevant because more and more over summers, we're having water restrictions put in place all over the country, no matter where you live or how much water you kind of have. It's going to be more prevalent having water restrictions.
And also just being environmentally like aware and more conscious about your water usage. And when when I first started thinking about dry gardens, I was thinking that's just, you know, the condition that some people naturally in coastal areas or in certain parts of New Zealand will have a lot, but there will be, you know, that's just what would happen each season. But there are some gardens that are going to have that more and more that typically may not usually see much drought. And so I was like, these are some of the things that you can do. But also, as the more I've looked into it, what I didn't realise is that many people really plan to have a dry garden, as in they want to plant a garden that's going to survive in the drought, like on purpose. Like they want to put in things that they don't have to water. Yeah. I hadn't thought about it that way until recently. And that's when I learned about from Zones Landscaping, which is a New Zealand company, about the term, which is, I think, is, okay, Greg, you're going to have to, I was going to say, what do you think I'm going to say? Greg did Latin as a, like,
I would have said,
as a past tidbit about herself. So I feel like she,
to do Latin, that's
so
weird.
So I feel like she would
have, I would have said
Xeriscape. Okay, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say Xeriscape. But yeah, Xeri, okay.
It's got an X. It's spelt with an X, though, which is interesting.
Like apparently, X-E-R-I Xeri is a Greek term for dry. So it's a dry landscape that you're trying to build in your garden.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, people, they can be really beautiful. I think, in my mind, before I really thought about it, I just thought of like a scrubby little patch of dirt.
Yes,
do you know what I mean?
That's what I thought. I thought it was, that's what you had. And so you just sort of did the best you could with it. But really when I've like,
like you live in the outback and that's just
whereas I've researched more and more and people actually using the term dry gardens for actually creating a garden that's going to be thrive in the dry. And they want it low maintenance. Like they don't want to have to do extra work on it. So,
Yeah. Monty has a dry garden.
Yes. I need to look at that episode, actually. I haven't watched him in a while.
There's not like a whole episode on it. But he'll I bet you could look on YouTube, but there'll be a compilation. Some super fan would have put a compilation out there.
I was going to say, Greer had a good idea for, so there's a lot of inspo. Like Monty.
Yes. So dry gardens have been around for ages. And not only the term like dry garden, but places like basically all of the Mediterranean, all their gardening is dry gardening, like around that kind of Greece especially. Those are all dry gardens. And then Sissinghurst has a dry garden, which was in the original plans for the garden back in Vita's, she did the plans. They went to Delos in Greece and fell in love with it and wanted to make a replica kind of Delos in Sissinghurst.
I can tell you've been to Greece with those terms you throw around.
Oh, just the place name. I don't even know if it's Delos. It might be Delos.
No, it sounds better the way you said it first.
But they, where Sissinghurst is not dry. So they just could never bring it to life because they just didn't have the tools to kind of make that garden. But in, I think it might have been around 2017, they finished work on it. It might have even been later than that. The people who run Sissinghurst now decided to put the dry garden in, and it massive excavation, putting kind of like poor quality soil back in. They put all these kind of like fake Greek ruins in there and massive rocks, and it's really interesting. There's a whole page on the Sissinghurst website about the dry garden and how they made it, really interesting. And then also there is, so Beth Chatto, who, she was kind of the champion of the right plant, right place. I don't know if she made it up, but she was like definitely the person who kind of like pioneered that phrase.
Let's say she did, because credit where credit's due. It sounds like something a smart woman would say.
It does. And she has an OBE, which I looked up, and it's the second highest award someone in the British Empire can get. And that's straight up for gardening. Like, she was just she's not just a gardener, but do you know what I mean? Like, she was a gardener, and she was awarded for it. Like, she knew her shit. So she wrote a book called The Dry Garden. And, I mean, she's also got a book called The Damp Garden. Like, she's just...
she's got... yeah, she's all over got it. Fingers in all gardening pies.
All pies. She's got so many pies and fingers. So that's also a really great resource if you can find a copy of The Dry Garden, and you can probably find it secondhand in quite a lot of places because I think it's quite an older
book. I would love it.
I feel like you could really thrive off it.
I've put it on my to-read pile. I'm going to hopefully get it from the library. Mm. The other thing I was going to say, which back to like you just think straight Mediterranean gardens, which I also love, but hadn't thought about Japanese gardens too, are also considered dry garden.
A what?
Yeah, like a Zen garden. So when I was doing some research, it's like Zen gardens can also be like a Eastern influence on how a dry garden works, and like heavy, which I've learned through this, in landscaping. And so in using only particular plants that are going to thrive in the spot and being restrained.
Because a Zen garden doesn't really have, like, it's not about the plants, is it? It's about how the hard landscaping works.
Yeah, mostly, and it's like natural, which we'll talk about soon, is like natural materials as much as possible, and where you will do planting around it is to use the plants that are just going to work really well with the area, and they just really restrain, like they don't go crazy. It's like a couple of plants. Yes. So it's not really my aesthetic, so it's probably why I've not really thought about it, but it could be other people's. Yeah, so as Greer said, that's why it's really important, like, to what Sissinghurst did. Like, they talk how much hard landscaping they did to create a dry garden. And
they were, I mean, that was an uphill battle, so they didn't naturally have the conditions for a dry garden, but they've got the money to, and the people, the manpower, to literally like dig out a whole area and then create the dry garden. So, I mean, I wouldn't suggest that if you had a boggy site, maybe a dry garden's just not going to happen for you. But maybe you have a site on your property that is a little bit drier and you can kind of build up.
Yes, and also what I mean about the success of like sorting your landscaping is if you do it well, you're actually maximizing how the water content that you may get to be dispersed most efficiently in your dry garden if it's done really well.
Do you mean like channeling it so it will go?
And thinking about it, because some people, if you're on a hillside, like doing terraces and where the water's going to flow and things like that.
Yeah. Or your runoff.
The runoff, yes. So like they talk about making sure that you really use natural materials. And I was like, most people would, But then I thought about it and...
What's not a natural material?
Exactly. But then I was thinking, I think they mean like
plastic?
I think they mean like really hard landscaping, like leaving it more like broken, you know, like gravel, chip, limestone, yeah. And yeah, and like bits of wood rather than doing a lot of hard concreting areas.
Yeah, got you.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you do use paving to design it so that the surface water runs to the areas of the garden that need it, or your plan. Then plan a bed where that runoff is that might, those plants might require more water, if that makes sense. Yes,
yeah, got it. Yeah.
You can reduce your lawn space, or as Greer knows, don't have it at all. That would be her.
Yeah, because lawn is a big sponge. Mm-hmm. So when we went to Otakaro Orchard, she was talking about the twitch that they had been battling. And she was talking about fruit trees. And how when we plant fruit trees now, like in the modern day, they're in a field and they've got grass all around them. But that's not naturally where a tree would grow. Like a tree wouldn't just grow around tons of grass because it's not actually beneficial for the tree, because the water gets soaked up by all the grass underneath it.
Yep.
And it's harder for that tree to access that supply. So it's in a forest, everything's, I don't know, kind of drips down and you have the forest floor and it does not have grass on it. So I remember that. And she lifted up like a thatch of kind of twitch and it had been raining, I think, and the ground was wet and it was bone dry underneath it. So when it rains, if you've got lawn, not a lot of that water is actually getting underneath that grass.
No. So that was really interesting. And the other option that you can do if you're still into lawns is either like reduce it or think about incorporating into your lawn different species, so again like variety, so maybe having chamomile or other like really cool ground covers that you can work in amongst.
And there are varieties of lawn, there's like grass that is drought tolerant, isn't there?
Yeah, a lot that might have like endophyte and things like that in it that can help, but you're still gonna, it's still going to take up a lot of water resource if you're trying to keep that green in the height of summer.
Yeah,
so probably the less the better, but again, gardener's choice. You do you.
You do you, boo.
Yeah.
Not judging.
Not judging here. The placement of plants is important too. So looking at your garden to see where the light levels of each area are. So if some parts are like super sunny and other parts are sort of dappled in shade, like naturally, like obviously plant accordingly, which you do in any garden. But as in a dry garden, if you don't have as much shade, you really want to put anything that you think might be super sun loving. You don't want to like take up the space of some plants that require a bit more like sensitivity to light.
Yeah.
Try and use shorter lived plants like annuals and more emphasis on like contrasting characteristics of the plants rather than just the color scheme. Because I guess in a normal garden, you can focus on that, but in the heat of summer lots of color plants wilt anyway, so you're just left with their structure. So that's a good way to look at it. And I talked about this before, but you can hydrozone your garden, which I never thought of. So you group your plants with similar water needs into certain areas around your garden. So if you have got a lot of runoff, you might want those plants that require more water, that are more damp loving, even though you have a dry garden, you would put them where the most amount of water is, or choose to put them in a place that's handy to a water access, so near a hose or if you've got a sprinkler or anything like that, or a drip line, and then everything else that doesn't require that you can plant.
And one thing I was going to say is that there's something you can't probably get around if you've got a really super dry garden and free draining soil, and that is veggies. So if you want a really productive veggie garden and you've got super stony soil or it just bakes, you might want to, you probably definitely will have to do raised beds for veggies so that you can put as much, you can control the soil basically.
Yeah.
And you can put much more water retentive stuff in there because they, veggies, like to get the most out of your crop, you're obviously planting it to eat it, not just to look at it. So they are hungry.
They're hungry. They're hungry.
They are hungry little veggies, little cuties.
And that makes sense. And as Gracie, like, you can do raised garden beds, but even like raised row, like, would work, because at least then you can even put some extra soil and mulch and things to like help control it a bit more. So
yeah, definitely.
Now we're going to talk about the planting options for drought.
Yes. So I got tons of these off Gardener's World, a Gardener's World article, and a website called Perennial Resource. And both of those websites will be linked in the show notes. So swipe up to shop. And they're not for sale. It's just for info.
So even though there's plants that are going to do better in a dry conditions, there are things you can do to help those plants still. So you can break up the soil in the hole as much as possible so that the plant has to spread its roots out as far as possible and as deep as possible, so it's going to tap into the most amount of water, which makes sense. And another tip I saw was plant the plant as deep as you can for that plant. You know, like sometimes you get a little lazy on the tools and you're like, that'll do.
Yes. When you're crouched in a really awkward position and you're like, oh, I can't be digging this hole anymore.
You've done a few, you're like, yeah, that looks about right. And then you put it in and it's, you're like,
and you kind of borderline. Just mesh it in there, yeah. And you're like,
borderline.
Mother loves you.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a top tip. And use younger plants because they're going to have more time to become hardy. Whereas sometimes if you buy the larger, more of mature plants, yeah, they can be a bit more babied in the nursery. So grow them lean. This came across, like, this term came, I came across like a lot, and I had no idea what it meant. Like, I thought it was like lean plants, like, okay. And then, but it just meant don't fertilize them and, you know, baby them so much, because a lot of fertilizers require water, and also fertilizer makes a plant grow really quickly, which means they have the potential to, if there's no water or rain about, if they have a massive growth spurt without, if you're not going to water them, it can actually be detrimental to the plant.
Yes, yeah, like let them just grow in their way.
Yes. And obviously just less water, just water them less so that they just become more acclimatized to not having so much water.
Yeah, and they do grow, the kind of the harder you are on them, the more their roots, you know, they try harder to get the water that they can access themselves.
Like I do with my children.
Yeah, treat them and keep them game.
Yeah. So think of plants with, when you're buying, like we're going to give a list, but as we talked about with like wind, what style of plant characteristics you should be looking for. So grey and silver leaves, which makes sense because they reflect the sunlight. Mm. So there's like less chance for the evaporation. Leathery or waxy leaf plants, and that also prevents water loss because it traps the water inside. Succulents, I mean, common sense there, really. Needle-like leaves or tiny little leaves on a plant. So, because there's less surface area for water loss.
So think of anything Mediterranean. If you look where the plant comes from, if you look up, you'll be able to see where it comes from. So anything from the Mediterranean region, anything from South Africa or Australia, they are going to do really well. The Sahara.
That was a straight gag.
Also, heaps of the prairie plants that we talked about in our prairie planting episode are drought tolerant. So there's also herbs. So my favourite, and I have probably about four different types of thyme because I love it so much as a plant. I just think it's a really beautiful plant, and there's heaps of different types of it, and it's pretty, and then you can also eat it. So I love that. Lavender does really well. Nepeta.
Yeah, I'm getting amongst those. I've got them on my list.
Yes.
Yeah.
Iris do really well. You want to make sure that you plant the corms. Are they corms?
Corms, yep.
Yeah, corms. You want to make sure you plant them so that they're not buried, and so they're just half in the soil and half out of the soil, and then they bake in the sun and you get a better flower.
Stop it.
Did you know that?
No, I did not know that. Shocking. Yeah. Don't even plant them. That sounds like the bulb for me.
Yes. Yeah. So you just have them so that they're just like half in the ground, half not in the ground. So the top of the corm can see the sun and it will bake in the sun, and the like hotter and drier it is for it,
yeah,
like the more sun it gets, the better the flowers will be.
Do you know, I often get confused with irises because the leaves of them look like a reed. So you think it should be growing near a pond.
Well, so there are irises. There are irises that grow. There are marginal plants as well. So there are types of irises that grow in the water.
Stop. They really do it all, don't they? Underrated. I don't know. Undervalued.
Yeah. they are really, actually. I've got a couple in the baby ones in the garden at the moment that Jack's mum gave me. So I'll see. Hopefully see them this spring, summer. But anyway, there is a plant called a Nautica Macedonica.
I'm glad you looked this up. Nautica. Yeah. Starts with K, though. That's a tricky one for all you plant-loving, name-loving peoples.
It's a type of scabious, and it's super cute. So I found this on an article about, like, wildflowers in England, I think. And, like, hopefully you can get it here, because we've actually been stung by this before when we look up plant lists and we can't actually get stuff here.
Don't hate us. We're lazy.
Yeah. We're lazy and we just see their cute things and tell people about them. But yeah, it's really super cute. It's like a little wildflower, but it looks like a scabiosa. Yeah. So, and then Eryngiums and Echinops.
I have to say,
globe thistle.
I love the name Eryngiums.
Well, you could call your next child Eryngium.
That's such a good word.
Verbascums, sedums, echinacea, salvias. There's so many different types of salvias and they are all pretty good. Buddleia, which I didn't realise. Buddleias are good in the drought.
Okay.
And then...
I was just going to say, I have looked up and you can get a Nautica Red Cherry.
Oh,
King cute. Seeds.
Perfect.
So if you're into a really clashing scarlet reed plant...
Not for me, thanks, but I think they are cute. And then pretty much all grasses are drought tolerant, so they featured in our... wind. And then also, so I found plants that I personally am not super into, but other people might be into, so I thought that I would list them. So there's euphorbias, red hot pokers, all succulents, yuccas, and pittosporum. So I've even written on there, like, you do you, boo. Like, if that's your vibe, if you're into those tones, go for it.
What's shocking is I wouldn't say they're my vibe, but now looking at that list, apart from a yucca, I had all those plants.
Do you have red hot pokers?
And they were in the section of garden round by the washing line that for ages I never did anything with, and I just left them there, and I could not kill them. They went over, a lawnmower went over them. They just kept coming back.
Well, that might be a good one, guys. Yeah, not for me, for my garden that I have at the moment, but they're also good ones. I think, like, euphorbias and red hot pokers, I think they're South African.
I love a good euphorbia, actually, depending on the situation. But
yeah, right, it'd be plant, too right
much
place.
Yeah, and it'd be too much in your garden.
It's way too much. Monty has quite a few euphorbias in his dry garden.
Just of course so he does. People know. Of course he does.
Just so people know. But that's pretty much it for the drought. It's very similar to the wind, so that's why we're kind of doing these episodes together, because a lot of the plants have crossovers.
Most of them do, in fact.
A lot of the time, if you're in a really droughty kind of place, you often do have, I mean, you have wind everywhere, but yeah.
It's just the air movement, isn't it, Greer?
Isn't it?
I was being sarcastic.
Circulation.
It's just circulation.
But yeah, hopefully that's helpful.
I think it is. And it might just get you thinking a little bit more about preventative things, like putting things in place that in the future, in the next few years, you'll be like, yeah, so glad I did that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. That's it for drought. Yeah. Libby, what have you been up to in the garden?
Actually, not too much, but I have been...
I know, it's only been a week, hasn't it, since we recorded last, so usually it's 2 weeks.
I know, and actually, once I looked, we've done something, we've been quite similar, and you inspired me last week with what you were going to do, and Greer is going to probably talk about her amazing potting table again, but I finally tidied up a nice area to store all my garden bits and pieces because they've just been scattered in the shed. So I've put them into this nice big, it's called a compactum, I don't know if people are familiar with the term, but it's basically just a big cupboard wardrobe thing with heaps of shelves in it that's now in our garage. And so it's just so nice to have everything organized.
Amazing.
Yeah. So
I love that for you.
Yeah, same. And so everything's in one place and I don't have to fuss around looking for everything. So that's exciting. And I don't have a potting like space yet. And mm-hmm. it just made me laugh because Greer gave me this beautiful video of her potting table. And I've used my recycling and rubbish bin lids, the red and yellow, to do mine this week.
Well, they're pretty good height, to be fair.
The height of them actually ergonomically was fantastic for me.
Yeah.
I didn't have to bend. I didn't have to hurt myself.
No, I feel like that'd be great.
Yeah. So, yeah, I potted up a lot of seedlings. I did a mixture of like veggies and flowers. So, and the veggies I sowed in pots and in the ground because I was just like, now I'm just going to get a whole heap on. I've still got some remainders, so I might try sow some more in the next coming weeks. And then I did some hardier flower seeds. So I finally did my status and I did some more scabiosa and some emmy, but it's the Visnia variety, which is the fern flower one.
Yeah,
not the major, but I have still got a couple of seedlings of that survived. And the only other thing, I started my new garden bed, which was exciting.
Oh, that is exciting.
Yeah, so I've just started removing some grass. And the next step is to, I've just been planning out a couple more areas. So I've just been walking around planning those. So I'm just getting a good idea of my next steps, you might say.
Yeah.
It's an exciting month, really, actually.
That is exciting. I feel like I need to come out and see what you've done.
I know you do. And it is an exciting, like, knowing that spring, like, you can actually do stuff now, like put seeds literally in the ground.
Yeah, it is exciting. Yeah. It's when you're a gardener, I feel like spring is a real exciting time of the year.
Yeah. So what have you been up to?
The only thing I did last weekend was a tidy up. So I sold some pots on Facebook and, oh my God, and the old potting table. But I just I put too much stuff on at once. It was so annoying. Anyway, and the other thing, so I sold a bunch of stuff on Facebook. I still actually have to do a couple, but they're full of dirt and I couldn't be bothered dealing with it. But I will do that in the coming weeks. But the other thing is that Jack finished the potting table.
I know.
So it's...
It's beyond words, Greg.
Yeah, I know. It's so cool. So the building is done and I just need to paint it and get some hardware like handles and hooks for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't be able to do it this weekend, but we'll definitely 100,000% do it next weekend because I'm so desperate to start using it. And I don't want to get any dirt on it from potting until I've painted it. So
yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I don't want to use it until it's finished. So super, super, super excited about that. So that wasn't something that I did, but Jack did. And I'm already feeling like now that I've sold some pots in the old potting table, I'm starting to see the outside space is looking a little clearer. So, yeah.
How good is a good declutter like that, not just in the garden plants but with the crap?
Yes,
because it's amazing how many pots or like you go plant something out and you're like, oh, I'll pick that up later, and then don't, and then a little bit sort of accumulate.
Yes, and it becomes just so messy so quickly. But what are you going to get up to in the garden?
Yeah, so very similar to Greer, I need to, I've got four big pots that I want to fill, and I'm not going to have heaps of little pots like I used to. I'm having really big statement pots is my idea on my deck, and one of them's got a rose in it, and I need to get, it's very sad in it, trust me. So I need
Did it come with you from Harrison?
And it needs to go on the ground, and I don't actually know where I'm going to put it, but I'll find a spot. And yeah, so I would just want to tidy some up, and I've got a huge one that the owner left, and I'm actually going to put a tree of some kind in there, but I don't know what, like either a miniature or a olive tree or a citrus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice.
So I'm not sure, but something. And cool. Just more seed sowing. I've got about 50 packets to get through, so, you know, it's just continual seed sowing. Yeah, so what about you, Greer? What are you going to do?
I'm much the same with seeds. So I'll just be sowing and looking after seedlings.
It's a full-time job. We've said it before, but it is.
Say it again. Say it till the cows come home. It is bloody tough out there. So I'll do that. Finish my potting table so I can actually like sow stuff on my potting table. Paint all the terracotta pots as well. And hopefully get rid of the hedge maybe next weekend.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay, next weekend we're on.
Sweet. Cool. We'll chop the tops off and jam them in your car.
I could even do it midweek. I could do it on my way home from work one night.
Oh, if you can be bothered, but don't stress about it. And I just want to say about what we're getting up to in the garden. It's nothing that I'm doing, but what my garden is doing. There is so much new growth on stuff at the moment, and I love to see it. Like, the honeysuckle has got so, like, that fresh green. There's nothing like that spring fresh green that comes up on plants, that early spring like that. It's just a lighter green. It's before the sun's really, like, burnt it. It's crisp. Just... Yeah, it's fresh.
It's so fresh because it's like new and tender, but also because it's been so dull and cold that when you see it in barren, the garden, like it's the transition into a season and we are here for it. And I love to see a season. I could not live without seasons. It must be so hard.
I could never live somewhere hot all the time because I would miss the change in seasons too much.
Yeah, I think I would too. And just perspire 24/7, so that would get you down.
Oh my god, and there's always so many spiders and bugs in hot countries.
Mm. Although,
straight up, so off-putting. And we digress, but what plant do you want to buy?
Oh, this is, I guess, a part two to last week's part one on the lavender. So I've actually been looking more into it, and I think I went a little bit wrong with what I said last week, because... Angustifolius, Lavender Angustifolius, is an English breed, and I think I said last time that it does can get a little bit woody, and it does, but it actually is a really hardy lavender. So I think I'm going to do a couple of different varieties because it likes a cooler climate, a lot of English lavenders, but for the dry and the hot to mix in between, I'm going to look at a couple of, I think a French variety is the Hidcote, which I think, did you talk about that you've got?
Yes, I really love Hidcote.
And if you see any Spanish varieties, which I didn't even know was a thing, but it's really common. And I had a look at Odorines and at Mitre 10 on their website, and they've got quite a few. And it usually just says Spanish varieties. And Greer, you might be able to read my notes and see, I think, is it called?
Denta? Avonview.
Avonview. There's quite a few Avonview varieties. Yeah.
And that's Spanish.
Yeah. she looks like you're full of shit.
I'm like not... Avonview. Sí, señora.
Sí, señora. Avonview.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I'm feeling a bit more confident about that. So I thought originally...
And what's a Trichrium frutans?
Oh, yeah, this is what in our very first episode, and Amanda wanted to know, a friend, that shrub, hedging shrub she's got, it's a very silvery small one with the little purple flowers. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the reason I've gone for that is I started thinking about that silvery, it's very good for drought, wind, it's a great all-rounder, and I have
quite fast too, I think.
Yeah, super fast. And I would quite like to use it in parts of the garden where I've got the kids' sand pit because thought it would be quite contrasting.
Mm.
Yeah. Not nothing that. Too deep there, just. And I saw it on Pinterest and I was like, yep, loving
God,
that look.
Pinterest is good, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. Nothing deep about that, super basic bitch, but yeah.
You're sometimes for it. That's what it is.
What are you looking forward to, Greg?
Well, I actually don't have anything on my to-buy list.
Shock.
I know, it's really shocking. I think because I have so many seeds to sow.
I know.
That it's a little bit overwhelming, and I feel like I just can't even think about anything else right now. Yeah. So I'm not actually looking to buy anything.
I I think as well, when I started sewing, did you start realizing actually how many more you had that you didn't realize?
Yeah.
Yeah, same. I'm actually
I need to do a bit of an inventory and like maybe a to-do list.
I've grouped mine into over the next few weeks, and in some of them I don't even think I'm gonna sew into trays. I think I'm just gonna direct sew in the garden bed that I'm hoping, and I think things eventually might not be in the quite the placements that I want, but I'll be able to like pull plants up as I go along.
Yeah.
And sort them out.
Yeah.
Again, really not a planner.
That's fine.
Really, you're half-hearted. Yeah.
No, but you're a doer. Mm. I'm a planner, and then I fall down at the doing a lot of the time in my life. So many plans, so little action, some might say.
Yeah, I would say the same, and sometimes very little action too. So I fail in both.
It's bloody tough out there sometimes.
It's a tough gig.
It is.
So I think that's about all for this week, but as Grace said earlier, send us through your spring thriving moments in the garden and what you've been up to. Any questions, if any of our listeners have any topics that they would like us to cover or just some questions, that would be great.
Yeah, hit us up. We want what you want.
Yes. Oh, that's direct. I'm here for it.
It felt a little bit aggressive, actually.
Yeah. Well done.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. But that is it for us today. Thank you for listening, and we love you.
Until next time, friends. See you.
Bye.
Bye.